The Errigal Arts Festival, in association with Highland Radio, now present the final part in our series, a new play, The Jumping In by Little John Nee.
This is how it happened. Late in the spring, in the year 2020, close to the sea, not a million miles from here, on a Tuesday. Cuban heels are useless for cycling. The man in the snakeskin boots climbs off the high Nelly bicycle, takes off the boots, and puts them in the basket that hangs from the handlebars. He gets back up on the saddle and cycles in his sock soles. Dirty old socks, worn wholly. Even idleness takes its toll over time. And he's worn out being idle. His farm has fallen down around his ears. The heat of the sun is unmerciful as he cycles into the village to collect his pension and do his shopping. He stops outside the village and puts on the boots before anyone sees him in his sock soles. His hair is combed, and he has on the cleanest of his dirty shirts. He pushes the bicycle into the village. As quiet as it always is, it's quieter now. The virus has put the fear of God in everyone. On his way into the shop, he nearly crashes into a woman who remarks upon his lovely boots. He knows these boots make him attractive to women. The devil's in them. Plastic gloves and disinfectant, Mother Divine God. What's the world coming to? He buys 5 packets of rashers and 4 packets of biscuits and 12 eggs. It annoys him buying eggs when he has 3 old hens at home. But you'd want to be a detective to find out where they have the eggs hid. He buys 3 bottles of whiskey, knowing it'll hardly be enough to last the week. And Margaret, the shopkeeper, says she'll get her husband Billy to drop off the shop in this evening, save him trying to take it home on the bicycle. He buys 2 extra naggins. One for the road home, and 1 in case he meets someone or something happens. Something always happens when you're drinking whiskey. He takes the long road home because he's curious. He is a naggin nearly drunk now. And he's talking to every sparrow, bird, butterfly and bumblebee that he meets on the road. Like St. Francis of Assisi. Sick of the bicycles weaving, he leaves it in the ditch and walks the rest of the way. Now the forestry rises up around him. Up ahead, he sees the neon sign, as tall as the trees. The Jumpin' In Motel. You'd swear you were in America. He looks at his snakeskin boots and waits for the devil to tell him what to do next. Thank you. finishes her cup of tea and rinses the cup. Alone in her wee house on the hill. Outside there's a constant hum of bees about the place. There's a crow on the roof knocking moss off the slates. Bridie's been planning this for a long while. She's been welding all morning. Because today's the day. The sun is conjunct Jupiter in her ascendant. She loads the van. If she gets stopped by the guards, she's going to tell them she's doing essential work. That wouldn't be a lie. If they asked her, she'll say she's a member of Dolphin Rescue and she's just got a call that a dolphin's been stranded on the shore. That would be a lie. Bridie first got a hankering to be a nun when she was at school. But see, from an early age, she found it difficult to give herself over to anything that was run by priests. And as far as she could see, the nuns were being run by the priests. She stops at a shop in the village to buy tobacco. On the way out, she nearly bumps into an old farmer. Well, he's probably the same age as her, but he looks old. They both try to pass each other. He goes this way, so does she. She goes that way, so does he. She laughs. It's too early in the day for dancing. She notices his boots. Them's lovely boots you have on you. His eyes are that bloodshot, they're practically bleeding. Puddles of pain. A world full of puddles of pain. Bridie had had a guru in India back in the 80s. He was a man till he left his body in 1991. God knows what he is now. He said to her, "You know what you have to do." And he smiled, and she smiled back, and she nodded. She hadn't a notion what he was talking about. It was only recently that she understood. When the pandemic came, it all became crystal clear. She woke one morning with the words on her lips. The obstreperous little sisters of the pentatonic mission. In the back of the van, she has three sheets of rusty steel, an empty 40-gallon oil drum, aluminium pipes, 8-foot posts, bags of sand, cement and gravel, nuts, bolts, power tools, welding gear, a shovel, and a plastic bucket. Nearly there now. Today's the day. She reckons the whole job should take her about 6 hours max. She'll have time for a swim before it gets dark. Up ahead, a neon sign, as tall as the trees. The Jumping In Motel. She slows down. You swear you were in America? Classy old cars. If this place ever opens, it'll be busy. And if people should dander down to the beach, they'll find the thing that she built. And their lives will be transformed forever. The Jumpin' In. An authentic 1950s Route 66 diner and motel with its own trailer park. The realization of a lifelong dream. Due to open on the first day of May. Then the lockdown came. No predicting a pandemic. Charlie writes a haiku every morning after yoga.
Yoga class on Zoom. Lockdown in the Jumping In. I follow my breath.
She started the morning after her husband Joe went back to London. They needed time apart. She wonders if Brambles were left alone, would they find a way to colonize the universe? Maybe that's the whole purpose of humans, to battle back the brambles. Coffee and pancakes for breakfast, and a conversation with an imaginary waitress.
I love this Formica. I'd say it was dead hard to get.
The jumping in, Charlie's dream, years making real. In her teens, she showed a natural flair for business, selling drugs in her council estate. Married Joe, a mirror image of herself. They run raves, bought from Source, set up a string of clubs. The Midas touch, always sussed. A nose for it, bored at 50, much money made, already ready to retire. Her and Joe toured Ireland in a camper van. And when she came here, she knew this was it. Felt it in her bones. Not too far from where her mother's people came from. So they bought a minging guest house and knocked it down and built the jumping in. She visualised bikers, retro freaks and rockabilly heads from all over the world. They had practically sold out in pre-bookings. The Silverstream trailers were gone the first day they went online. They had bands booked, a rockabilly festival in June, tattoo convention in July. There was a powder blue Buick Skylark convertible and a 57 Chevy Bel Air out the front. They were for show, but they had British cars for hire by the hour. Two Morris Minors, a Cortina, a Ford Zodiac, and two Harley Davidsons in a warehouse in Liverpool waiting to be shipped. Vintage surfboards from California, all gathering dust. Today the plan is to cut back the brambles around the trailer park. She buttons up her overalls and grabs the strimmer. She works through the afternoon. It doesn't take long for the yoga to wear off. It's hot. She stops. She walks back to the motel for some beer. She takes a notion, goes into the office and opens the safe. Joe had left a gun there. Better safe than sorry, he said. Idiot. She checks the chamber. It's ready to go. She takes the snub nose and a six pack of beer back to the trailer park, knocks back a bottle and has a cigarette. She puts the bottle in a tree stump, steps back a bit and pulls the trigger. The kickback nearly dislocates her shoulder. She misses. She thought it'd make her feel better. It doesn't. She realises how insane she is. She throws the gun away. Looks at the beautiful Silverstream trailers and bursts out crying. Out on the road, the man with the snakeskin boots is peeing on nettles when he hears the gunshot. He puts himself away too fast and wets his trousers again. They wake up in the ferns, where they fell asleep after lovemaking, saturated with the musky scents of the forest, and their senses stimulated by a swell of micro-sensations. Lucky and Buster spent the past 2 weeks living here in the shade of the trees. In the night, they swim in the sea. They make love often, beyond bliss this, samadhi hey. They listen to the trees talking to each other, everything humming and buzzing, and the sparkle of breath, the smell of it, the feel of it, all the wee vibrations. Everybody knew how bad the situation was, and it wasn't getting any better, it was getting worse. And so it was, benevolent beings started arriving from neighbouring galaxies, seeing if they could do anything to help. We extraterrestrials undertaking hazardous journeys and appearing like human doctors full of goodwill. Lucky and Buster came ashore off the northwest coast of Ireland the first weekend of the lockdown. They didn't know what was going on because there was nobody around. So they decided to chill out till they could figure out what to do next. Have a wee holiday, so to speak. Why not? So it is, they savour all the magic things around them, enthralled by the mesmeric patterns pulsing through everything. They've already spent a fortnight orbiting the Earth in an old rust bucket that they tried to disguise as a commercial satellite. It resembled more a washing machine. They hear footfall. And then... a human with a weapon. Killing plants. Coming this way. Lucky and Buster are lovers, not fighters. Simultaneously, they secrete the odour of death, a repellent to deter predators, putrid and pungent even to themselves. The machine stops. They lie motionless, listening to the human footfall grow faint again. Then they grab their clothes and run back towards the sea. At the shoreline, they see another human, or maybe it's an android. It's hard to tell. Are they wearing a helmet or is that their head? They have a weapon too. There's sparks flying. They're cutting steel. Lucky and Buster grab each other by the hand and run like mad. They dive into the sea. They dive deep. They swim. They wash. Then they resurface, curious. They watch the human. There's a gunshot in the forest. The human on the shore takes off their helmet and looks towards the trees. Then suddenly she turns and sees them and waves. Patsy Kern, with one leg busy, walks towards the trailer park. His snakeskin boots are fair singing to him now, singing from the devil's hymn sheet. He passes below the big neon sign and on through between the diner and the flash American cars. A bit of swagger, a lot of stagger. Far as he's concerned, this is his movie now. In the trailer park, Charlie sits in the dirt. Poxy yoga. The only reason she shot at the stupid empty bottle was to relieve the tension that's built up from trying to be zen about everything. She's too angry to cry anymore. She wipes her face with her hand. Bloody virus, she hasn't been anywhere or met anyone in a week, and she's still paranoid about touching her face. Joe only rang once since he left. When he did, she told him not to bother ringing again. He hasn't rang since. Idiot. It's not as if he usually does what she tells him to do. There's a rotten smell coming from the ferns. Mary reckons the gunshot must be someone hunting in the woods. She's a good mind to go up there and sort them out. But she knows she needs to stick at what's in front of her. She has to lift a sheet of metal up off the ground and hang it from the springs attached to the timber crossbeam. She'll ask these two young fellas coming out of the water to help her. If they hoist the chain, she can hook it on, and they'll all be able to stay socially distanced, nearly. Lucky and Buster are pulling on their clothes when they see the metal cutter woman coming towards them. Pridie has already said hello, boys, when she realises she's not sure if they're boys or girls. It's hard to tell. Beautiful looking. They both look a bit like Jimi Hendrix, without the moustache. I was wondering, would you just be able to do me a wee favour? Lucky looks at Buster. They both look confused. They've been preparing for this moment for a long time. Their first encounter with a human being. Kaji Maratatu Bananti. Charlie stands up and brushes the dirt off the arse of her overalls. She heads through the forest, down towards the sea. The only good thing about this pandemic is you have the whole beach to yourself. She remembers she threw the gun in the undergrowth. She'll look for it later and throw it in the bin. The first noggin is gone, so he opens up the second one. Wasn't he the wise man to get to? He slouches up to the trailer park, ready for a fight. No fear, because he knows the devil's on his side. But there's no sign of nobody, only empty American caravans. He kicks something, looks down at his feet, and there it is, a gift from the devil himself, a revolver. Now we're talking. There's going to be some changes in this parish, he says out loud. He likes the feel of the gun in his hand. Life's not so bad. Sitting in the forest drinking whiskey. And then he's overcome by tiredness. He lies back in the ground and falls asleep. Charlie starts to unbutton her overalls while she walks through the forest towards the beach. She so needs a swim. She comes out onto the beach. What the f***? Bridie waves. Lucky and Buster start waving too, because isn't that what humans do? Bridie says, I was wondering, would you give us a wee hand? We need someone to hold on to this for a minute. Charlie doesn't really like hippies. Her mother was one. But for some inexplicable reason, she finds herself grinning. There's such a good vibe of these people. Maybe it's the pandemic. She really wants to hang out with him. Brady explains the whole notion of the obstreperous little sisters of the Pentatonic Mission. She's going to build contraptions like this all over the island. Musical installations where strangers can meet and make music. He wakes up in the ferns. It's getting dark. Even he notices the bad smell. There's only a dribble of whiskey left. He struggles to get on his feet. He takes the gun out of his pocket and starts walking towards the diner. And the Boots are singing the Wild Colonial Boy. Charlie hits the switch and the neon sign lights up. It looks so good. The Jumpin' In Motel. She puts milkshakes on the counter. Buster's explaining to her that they're not really from Gort to Hork. Glad now that they took that option to learn English as a second language. Still thinking Irish though. Bridie can't believe that they've got vegan burgers and they taste so good. Lucky's fascinated by the jukebox. Charlie can't remember ever being this happy, sober. She looks outside and sees the moon above the trees and her beautiful neon sign. She knows everything's going to be alright because there's good people in the world. He drinks the last dribble of whiskey and chucks the bottle. He staggers past the bin where he found the snakeskin boots last week. He sees them in the diner. They all look happy. He's gonna shoot the place up like in the movies. And when the guards come, he'll go out in a blaze of bullets like Ned Kelly. And he won't be lonely anymore. Then he remembers Margaret in the shop said she'd get Billy to drop off the shopping at his house. There's 3 bottles of whiskey in the shopping. It'd be bad to die thirsty when there was drink at home. He swings away from the diner and sways towards home.
The Jumping In by Little John Nee, commissioned by the Errigal Arts Festival and Grinnell Theatre and the Glen Centre, Manor Hamilton. The Errigal Arts Festival is proudly supported by the Arts Council of Ireland, Fáilte Ireland and Donegal County Council.